Okay, this is kind of a math and physics joint conference. So here I will try to explain why the Braid diffusion category appear in the physical system. And one of important goal in condensed matter physics is try to understand the phase of matter, and for a long time. We thought all the phase of matter and the phase transition are classified by so-called symmetry breaking. And however, after discovery of quantum Hall state, we realized that there are a gap phase beyond the symmetry breaking. So there is a new kind of order, which is called a topological order. So in physics, people usually start with study examples. So here I'll give you some example for topological order. The topological order is something in a many-body system described by many-body wave function. That is a wave function with n variable, where n is a number of particle which you are going to take approaching infinity. Okay, so this wave function defined on the two-dimensional plane, the z is x plus iy. It's a wave function with a filling fraction 1, so that's an integer quantum Hall states. Okay, and this is fermionic because it's a totally anti-symmetric function. So we have f that means fermionic. And Laughlin got his Nobel Prize by replace 1 with m, so this is a fractional quantum Hall state. So this is it's bosonic if m is even, fermionic if m is odd, and which can be written as a m's power of the filling fraction 1 quantum Hall states. So this is a kind of an example of a many-body wave function which have a topological order. Okay, and we call this many-body wave function because of falling, not only have n variable, because we try to embed that into the Hilbert space with n equal to zeros, no particle, one particle, two particles, etc. We have a direct sum of those vector space with all different number of particles. And certainly this particular wave function would belong to the n component of that space. Why we want to do that? Because once you do that, then you'll find that if those vector space of a symmetric function or anti-symmetric function, then this direct sum can be written as a direct product of a Hilbert space on each space point, which are two-dimensional, have only 0, 1. 0 means no particle, 1 means one particle. So this is kind of like a magic from this many-body wave function, n variable wave function, you can embed into this tensor product states. And this is, we heard several times now, is this is a structure we require for the total Hilbert space. So it has this local structure, tensor product structure. Okay. And we also heard invertible topological order from Dan Fried yesterday. So it turns out that this filling fraction integer quantum Hall states is an example of invertible topological order. But certainly for fraction quantum Hall states, they are not invertible. Furthermore, if a filling fraction not equal to 1 is equal to 2 or 3, they are also invertible topological order. This is a trick here because this is a fermionic topological order. So to show this is a invertible, basically, so there is no topological excitation except boson and the parent fermion. There is no other topological excitation. That's one way. Another way to show that is if you put this wave function on Riemann surface of any genus, the ground state degenerate is always equal to 1.
So we had the definition was that you cannot find a local unit real.
Okay, yeah, this is the edge states. The edge state is totally chiral.
No, but here's a wave function. you're saying that for n equals 1, there should be a local unitary sum transformed to the product state.
Yeah.
Can one actually exhibit
it? It cannot transform to product state.
For n equals 1. For n equals 1, you can, right?
You cannot. And to prove that, I don't know. It's a so this is this quantum house. This states have a so-called thermal Hall conductance coming from Cairo edge states.
Both you multiply the same by complex conjugate, there, right?
Yeah.
So then there should be a local unitary.
Yeah.
Is it, can one actually find this local unitary? Can one exhibit this local unitary?
No, we didn't try, but. We do have some argument to say if you have if this state plus its complex conjugate, the edge state is non-chiral, and then we can show that the edge can be gapped without anything left behind. So this part we can do. So there's a edge state can be gapped without leaving any sector and any other thing behind. So it can be trivially gapped. So this is argument to say this state plus its complex conjugate. It's trivial, yeah. But to really show local unitary to product states, yeah, we don't really. It's hard to show that.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, maybe it's a stupid question, but mu equal n, where n is an integer, yeah.
Yeah, this n is integer, yes.
So that means that you will have zi minus zj to the power of 1/n, right?
No, it's I didn't write it down for the purpose because this involves so-called second normal level. It's no longer holomorphic. You can see this wave function, the first part is holomorphic, except Gaussian part. And but when n equal to 2 or 3, then it's involving z star. You know, it's a wave function is a mess. And it's hard to write down in this nice form. Both these two wave functions are so-called in the first normal level, they always have form a holomorphic function times some Gaussian part.
So this you didn't give a formula for this psi f I q h?
No, I didn't, because it's a complicated write down.
For 1/m it is simple, but for m it is
for 1 is simple, 1/m is simple, but for 2, 3 they are complicated.
Ah, they're kind of hypergeometric or something like that.
I don't know. It's involving complex z dagger. Z star. It's no longer holomorphic. It's it involves some Lagrange polynomial or something. Yeah, it's a kind of solution of harmonic oscillator. There's some special functions involved.
That's because you're no longer quantizing a good Trim Simons theory, but you have these like fractional levels?
Not fractional level, it's just a second lambda level. It's when you have magnetic field, there's many lambda levels, and we just feel different lambda level. And
is it going to be a typo in the slide? Because let's say, something
has
an invertible
flow
because it's supposed to be
new equal
to 1.
New equal to n for 1, 2, 3, 4, any integer is fine.
Okay.
New equal to fractional 1 is bad. It's not invertible.
Okay.
So as I mentioned, that this B and F means whether it's totally symmetric or totally anti-symmetric. And then that gives us two kinds of topological order. Totally symmetric is a bosonic topological order. Totally anti-symmetric is a Fermion topological order. So there's a two flavor. It's actually very, very different. Actually, there's even more exotic topological order we call non-abelian topological order. So we have a non-abelian statistics. We heard about that in the colloquium yesterday. So with this notation, it's very easy to write down the wave function with non-abelian topological order. Just start with the new to 2. That's the one we couldn't write down. And square it just like what Laughlin did. And then you get a bosonic topology order, which is so-called SUN level 2. In this case, SU2 level 2 topology order. It describes the Trim Simons theory of SU2 level 2. And this is a bosonic one because the square of anti-symmetric wave function gives you a totally symmetric wave function. So then you can cubic it. If you cubic it, you get a total anti-symmetric wave function. So this is fermionic. So this would be SU3 level 2. So you can play this game. You can do new to m raised to the nth power, you get SUN level m Trim Simons theory. So you can easily get this sequence of SUN level m topological order just from this wave function. And this is a so-called construction via a slave particle. There's a technique developed for high-tech superconductor. And there's another approach via this conformal field theory. using correlation conformal field theory, one can write down this so-called Pfaffian state, which is have this a pairing part and this a gesture function part. And this is another wave function with a non-abelian topological order. It turns out that this wave function, both bosonic, they have same type of non-abelian statistics. They differ by some abelian statistics, but they have same type SU2 level 2 non-abelian statistics. And the quasi particle in this case cannot perform universal quantum computation. But however, the quasi particle in this SU3 level 2 can perform universal quantum computation because they have a Fibonacci non-abelian statistics. Yeah.
How did you argue to give you SUM level n? When you do this slip particle construction, how do you argue that SUM level n? Well, I assume you will go to the bottom.
There's a way to do that. One way to do this is a following. You can work with edge states. For example, in this case, if you do not square it, you have this filling fraction 2 state. So edge state is a central charge 2 U1 Gaussian model. If you have two of this wave function independently, you have a four branch edge state, central charge 4. But when you square it, that means the variable in the first wave function, the variable in second wave function should be glued together. So this is a binding. And there is a way to do the binding by coupled gauge field. And so when you couple the gauge field to project out this relative motion, you'll find you can turn the sig to 4 to something fractional central charge, which happen to be this Casimir algebra states. So that's kind of the way to see this.
So from A is edge alternator.
Yeah, here is A is a totally anti-symmetrization of this, because this wave function is not totally non-symmetric. So A is totally anti-symmetrization. So this part totally anti-symmetric. This part is also totally anti-symmetric. Their product is totally symmetric. So that's give us bosonic wave function. So that's a, yeah.
Are they related in general? If you take, for example, SU2 at level K, are they related to correlators of the Yasumin algorithm?
Yes, and so this type of wave function, because the new SU2 involving Z star, so they are non-holomorphic, so they are not ideal. So there is a way to deform this wave function to include the electron with a spin, like spin up, spin down. And then you can put everything in the first along the level. And this became holomorphic function. In that case, this holomorphic version of this can be written as a correlation of the simple current of this SU2 level 2. So actually, this is a very general construction for using every simple current algebra. The correlation of a simple current would produce electron wave function. And this many body electron wave function of this kind will produce non-abelian statistic described by this simple current algebra. So there's a very generic simple current construction. But again, it's not proven. We believe there's correspondence. Or there's a gap in the derivation. Yes?
Do you know which ones are realized in the physically?
This one, maybe there's a good chance there's a one of a state realizing this one. Yeah. Well, it's hard to say. You know, these two are very similar. And so one need to have a more detailed experiments. But however, numerical calculation for some realistic interaction seems to favor this one over this one. Yeah.
Then you can prove that it can be expressed in terms of correlators of the Yasumin algorithm.
Yes.
Some coefficients which are rational functions. This follows from the Riemann-Hilbert.
I see.
But the exact formula you will not be able to get from.
Okay. Yeah. So so this is an example. So the question says now we want to study this topological order systematically. You know, how to systematically study all these topological order rather than through some examples. So just like mathematics, to get us to have a systematic understanding of topological order, we need a topological invariance. You know, example, just an example to realize those non-trivial topological invariance. But what is topological invariance? So one of topological invariance required this notion of a locally indistinguishable. So it's really the following. Suppose we have a many-body wave function, as I just write down. We put that many-body wave function, for example, on a sphere, on a torus. You know, they all have a complex structure. So we can have a notion of a complex coordinate, a notion of a holomorphic function, so we can do that. But then we ask the question, suppose we have a one-wave function we put on the torus, for example. Then we ask, do we have another wave function which are locally indistinguishable from the first, but globally still different? So that is the question. And actually, the answer is yes, and also depend on the topology of space. On the sphere, it turns out that there is no other wave function. The local property of the first wave function uniquely specifies itself. But however, on the torus, you'll find that there are orthogonal wave function, but locally indistinguishable from the first wave function. So therefore, there is a collection of wave function which are locally indistinguishable from each other. So that's a source of this. If you realize those wave functions as a ground state of some local Hamiltonian, then they all form a degenerate ground state because they are locally indistinguishable. So that's a so-called topological ground state degeneracy. So the dimension of such a space is we call topological degeneracy. So this is one of our topological invariants. So number of locally indistinguishable states on different topology of space is one of our topological invariants. So basically, this topological invariance is used to define topological order. You know, the notion of topological order is introduced because of this this topological degeneracy.
What is the definition of local
indistinguishable? Locally indistinguishable means we have a two-way function, and you can compute the correlation function of a local operator in some neighborhood. Then you'll find that for these two different wave functions, they all the same. For arbitrary local operator, you know, as long as they are not too far apart.
What is a local operator?
OK, local operator is a very good question. Because the Hilbert space have this kind of decomposition. So the tensor product of one on each space point on each side. The local operator is operator which act on within each individual two-dimensional space or on this neighboring two-dimensional space. No, this I already translate. You know, this wave function is a function of z, but this n variable is embedded into this n particle subspace. This direct sum is actually can have a tensor decomposition, can be written as a tensor of the local vector space on each side.
Which side? I see function of n variables. What is z?
Z is a location. It's a different location. So we imagine we triangulate. So there's a several steps. We triangulate a two-dimensional manifold. So there's a side. So the z label those are sides. Yeah, if you do continuous tensor product, then you can just. So I do triangulation, so that's why you triangulate that, then you make a final triangulation. So there are several jumps here. Yeah. So locality is indeed very, very important. And
you're mixing different dimensions here, that's why one is the wave function, the function
of
the ZI.
Yeah.
So the ZI, there's no notion of locality.
There are after I do this embedding.
That's right. I hand you a function of
yeah. No, wave function don't have to have locality. Okay. So in terms of wave function, the so-called local operator is something like the derivative of x, you know, derivative of y, or some kind of a delta function of x minus x zero, or their derivative, or things like that. Those kind. You just multiply, for example, one of the local operators, you make Yeah, this, I think this may be a trick here. Probably I should, to really have a better way is, okay, let me put it this way. One of the local wave function, you multiply a function with a compact support. So this function has some shape. It's non-zero only near certain neighborhood x0. You multiply this function to this wave function, so this will be a one of a local operator. I believe all the local operator can be written this way. X is xy, so the coordinate, xy. They are sum over all. So that is a, that's a many body operator, which is symmetric under a changing particle. But I'd rather to, you know, from here to here, this is like a canonical ensemble to grand canonical ensemble. This is a magic to me, very simple. But to here, total vector space became a tensor product, then you can define locality more easily. Yeah, and so this this locality is a key, actually in this game. That is, we only study system with a locality. And if one abandons this locality condition, then there's a more system you can study. That the system would be maybe less under control. There's a lot of more general system one can study. Yeah.
So in this case, is the psi f for one is this the Hilbert space of Chern-Simons theory?
No, this is not really Chern-Simons theory. This is many body wave function, which is a pretty ugly. But however, it's a low energy effective theory is a Chern-Simons theory. So we try to say that this is a finite concrete realization of a Chern-Simons theory on the lattice. This wave function can be put on a lattice. If you imagine Z is a discrete, it's a label of the vertex of some fine, very fine triangulation space. So this is, you can say that it's a concrete finite realization of Chern-Simons theory.
Maybe in the Chern-Simons literature, there's a way of realizing the Hilbert space as a kind of an infinite tensor product. I was wondering, is that the same?
Oh, I don't know. You're in the field, you know, Chern-Simons field theory is.
Yeah, the Hilbert space fails to involve parallel homology construction. The Hilbert space is a kind of tensor product.
Tensor product, but each component have a sense of a location in the manifold.
Location on a Riemann surface.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize that. Yeah, that's a.
These
are probably the same. Because to have Chern-Simons theory, to have that realization is quite tricky, you know. And we do this, this wave function is not generic, you know, it contains a lot of non-universal features. To do that within the topological field theory, I don't know. Yeah, that would be really interesting. Yeah. So just a dimension of this, indistinguishable state is not too much information. So to get more information out of it, so we'll consider a state on the, say, on the torus, we call the sigma 1, genius 1. And we put some kind of arbitrary metric on this manifold. So this gives us so-called modular space, yes. Yes, actually it's a number of simple objects in the fusion category.
DG1
is number of simple objects.
Okay, and
yeah.
DG is the number of conformal blocks on genus G.
Yes, but the number of conformal blocks on genus G for the correlation of a simple current operator.
Yeah,
so that's
well,
a.
Well, in the examples we discussed, in the WZW.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. For simple current correlation function, this number of conformal blocks. And suddenly when you put a metric on a Riemann surface, you can choose different metrics, that's different choice of metric from a so-called modular space.
Why did you leave this refinement of what he said? He said the number of conformal blocks, and you added something about special currents.
Well, the primary field. But
you don't need them, it's the same number.
The correlation function for arbitrary primary field may grow indefinitely exponentially as a number of operator.
That's for sure, but the conformal block on the torus, the zero-point function on the torus, there's a number of conformal blocks, and I think this is what you asked.
Oh, that's a zero-point function? This is not what I mean. This wave function.
The same as the number of conformal blocks of zero-point functions on the
torus. Not zero-point function. Here, what I'm talking about is n-point function, where n go to infinity.
Like the simple current is the same. That's why I asked why your refinement of that comment is necessary.
Because I don't understand the zero-point function. So when I say wave function of electron always means the n-point correlation function of simple current. And this n-point correlation of simple current.
There are conformal blocks on the torus. I think this is what you're talking about. And what that means is zero-point function. These are functions of tau.
Yes,
they're not functions, they're sections, etc.
Yeah.
There's a number of them, and they form a vector space.
Okay.
The dimensionality is d, and I think this is what you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, but this is not what I mean. Because the number of state on a torus is a number of a distinct wave function like this. If there is no variable, we only have one state. We cannot have several states. Yeah, if you have a collection of all wave and simple current, then that's like n go to infinity the limit. Yeah, it's the same number. Yeah.
It has exactly the same action, the modular group and all that actually is exactly the same way. Yeah.
This is a I still want to emphasize the difference. And here we're really dealing with a function of n variable with n go to infinity. The reason is that I emphasize the difference following, because this wave function have a natural inner product. So their inner product is defined just as a usual. This many body wave function take absolute square integral to all the z, that's a natural inner product.
The other ones also have a natural inner product.
Yeah, and these two inner products to agree each other is a one of a key issue here.
Your wave function has another.
Because we cannot prove that. And there's a conjecture, these two inner products are the same, but we couldn't prove that. This is one of a key open question here. The reason for that is very obvious, is that we can also even using non-unitary theory to construct such a wave function. And if you start with non-unitary conformal field theory, we believe the two inner products are different. And we believe, again, we believe like a faith. For unitary theory, they are the same, but we couldn't prove it. And so that's why I emphasize that for the correlation function of simple current in the n go to infinity limit, somehow this condensed matter inner product agree with conformal field theory inner product. This is one of the key assumptions in the simple current approach for the quantum Hall states. And so that's why I make such a distinction.
What do you mean this equality?
In the conformal field theory, there is an inner product in the sense of a state. You know, the conformal field, many body state of field theory. And however, here there's inner product defined in terms of correlation function. We have a correlation function. And for this wave function, we just take absolute value squared, the integral over z. We define the inner product for correlation function. Somehow, the inner product defined for the correlation function of a simple current algebra agree with the field theory, this internal inner product of a conformal field theory. And this is a magic to me. So this the simple current construction uses this magic. Because we don't have conformal field theory, we just have a correlation function. And we use correlation function formally to define inner product. This is a weird thing to do, but somehow it's produce right results.
Your wave function depends on tau, so it's not quite this.
Oh yeah.
Analog of that for the torus.
Yeah, certainly. There's a well, if you put on a torus, there's other things.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is exactly the same as what you would get from the conformal block of insertions of n prime of n operators in the chiral algebra on the torus.
Yeah. Exactly what I try to say is that if you
the properties and the inner product of this thing that I've just described is identical.
I feel that if you put in this particular Gaussian factor and then define the formal inner product of a correlation function, and somehow this formal inner product of a correlation function can, in the n go to infinite limit, can simulate the inner product of conformal field theory. That is so that is using the correlation function to simulate conformal field theory itself. Using correlation function of conformal field theory to simulate the conformal field theory itself. Because the inner part of conformal field theory is defined differently, not using correlation function. It's just just this field theory states. They have their own definition. And but the correlation function can simulate that. It's a kind of magic. Certainly, you have to put a proper Gaussian factor here. On Riemann surface, you probably, this may be a Kähler potential you have to put in. Using correlation function of a conformal field theory to simulate that.
You're building the Hilbert space with the 2 plus 1 dimensional guy by
using correlation function, yeah.
But that is standard, right? This is what,
well, I mean, there is a KZ connection in conformal field theory, and that connection is preserved in some sense, Hermitian Forman fibers. And then monodromy, you can argue, there's a general argument that monodromy will also preserve the form. This is why I think they agree, but I don't understand the statement that they don't agree in the non-unitary case.
Because of the definition of inner product as an absolute square integral over z, this is by definition a positive definite. And so this particularly defined inner product is always positive definite. So that's why I try to say this they do not guarantee to agree with conformal field theory inner product. For non-unitary conformal field theory, the inner product is not positive definite. And however, the definition, in my definition, absolutely wave function integral over all variable, this inner product always positive definite. So at least for non-unitary conformal field theory, they do not agree. And also for finite n, they do not agree because the finite n is that they don't even behave very well, and so only in the n go to infinite limit there's a conjecture they agree.
But you're going to have some space in general in a non-abelian case. You're going to have some space of functions which is dimension more than one, and that space will have a Hermitian form which is not necessarily positive. So some Hermitian matrix which will go into the formula for the inner product, right?
No, but this inner product is by definition always positive definite. It's just absolutely wave function integral over all variable z. It's always this is condensed matter inner product. It's by definition is always positive definite.
It seems there's a different perspective. You're starting from an electron system.
Yeah.
Right, physics, like electron system. And the mystery is, you know, if you're a mathematician, conformal blocks are natural, but from the point of view of interacting electrons, that's the mystery. Why do conformal blocks and why the natural equal space? That's what he's expressing. You know, it's an electron system in a particular polarization.
Yeah.
There is nothing to do with CFT and CFT appear.
So this is actually a topic of another talk. But anyway. In this particular case, the single current is a dimension 1/2. Here is dimension m over 2.
So how do you integrate them?
Oh, this is a wave function. Just put on the just do the multivariable integral. We just do this dz square 1 dz square 2, absolute value square of wave function variable z n, and that's the inner product of this wave function. No, certainly this wave function is now normalized, but this defines the norm of this many body wave function. No, I have the explicit wave function. You just do the integral. And there's a way to put this wave function on the Riemann surface using theta function, and you do the same thing. No, there's no such a requirement because this function is very ugly. I say the you don't have those nice property. For example, you can use this swing function to compute this monodromy. The monodromy is not conformal filtering monodromy, only in the long distance limit. Okay, you need to put this wave function on the surface by replacing this ZmiZj as a theta function of ZmiZj on the, you can do that on the torus, for example. Yes, so on the torus, for example, on the torus with a flat torus, it's okay. Certainly on the Riemann surface with non-trivial metric, yeah, there's other things. Yeah, they're not supposed to conform. This is just a many-body system. It's a very ugly. Depend on all the detail of a short distance detail, but somehow in the long distance, something universal emerges. And yeah. This is my not half. This is my second slide. So here I have a moduli space, and for different metric on the torus, for example. Then we already said on the torus there's several locally indistinguishable states on the torus, and so therefore for each point in the moduli space, we have a vector space formed by these locally indistinguishable states. So this way, what we get is a vector bundle over the moduli space. The fiber is this vector space formed by these degenerate ground states. Okay, and then there is Then certainly this vector bundle, as a vector bundle, the determinant bundle is a line bundle. So you can, from there, you can get some curvature. And this curvature, again, I'm jumping a lot. This curvature corresponds to, if this curvature have a non-zero trivial Chern number, it will correspond to this gravitational transaminant term, have this coefficient C. So that's how the central charge of topological theory appears is as a local curvature of the determinant bundle over the moduli space. But certainly, the moduli space is now similarly connected. The pi 1 of the moduli space actually described by the mapping class group of the torus. So therefore, when you go around this non-trivial loop in the moduli space, there's another rotation of this vector. So that's a vector bundle. So this there's a two generator of this pi 1. One is a 90 degree rotation of the torus, another is a Dane twist of the torus. And this go along this non-trivial loop gave us this unitary matrix of S and T, which form a representation modular group, you know, in some sense. So basically, those kind of things are kind of a topological invariants. And certainly, you can do this construction for Riemann surface of any genus. And so there's a belief or folklore that this kind of vector bundle on the Riemann surface of any genus is everything. It's everything. So that means they are fully, completely characterized topological order. So that's all the data we can have.
You mean together with this connection?
Yeah?
Together with the connection.
Not yeah.
Just with connection.
So basically, what I intend to say that if two vector bundles cannot be distinguished into each other, we say they are distinct.
No, but you mean it's not just one. You include this flat connection, projectively flat connection.
Right? Yeah. This is central charge C, but that's only this some kind of central charge.
If you also say, when you say determine, you probably need to fix. When you have a curve of genus G and you pinch it, degenerate,
yeah.
It goes to genus G minus 1, and you should fix the data of limit.
Yeah.
And if you do that, then it's actually a theorem of the limit.
I see.
Which says, and in fact, it's enough to consider
genus 1.
Genus 0.
genus zero in that.
Already enough to consider genus zero.
I see.
You have a tower of bundles like that with the generation data.
I see. So here,
the same data as braided tensor K.
I see.
This is explained.
That'd be correct.
I think you need more information from the pores. Because if you take the same data and you can remove a subset of the object in the category, then the modular group is not going to act properly on the pores.
No, but modular action, you know, modular tensor category is a property, it's not a structure. If you have a braided category, then you can define the S matrix. And then this is just a property that it's not degenerate.
Yeah.
So it's recovered from the braided structure.
Yeah.
No, I know that this thing will give you S, but there's a question of whether you satisfy all the porous equations.
Yeah, it will satisfy. So if you have a braided tensor category with a non-degenerate S, then it is actually modular. Well, yeah. The scale problem. Yeah.
So the.
No, the theory will be fine. But the porous equation will give more constraints. You can easily construct examples. For example, you gave the case example of icing. If you just remove the spin field, everything on the sphere is fine. There's an S and everything is fine. But the porous is not going to give you a representation of the modular.
Well, we are probably talking about some different.
Yeah, so here I did not do this pinching because there's a. As you suggested, is very good because we should consider all the Riemann series together, including the pinching process. And by the moment, because I don't know how to, because pinching could induce singularity, so I don't know how to handle that. So in this case, I just what I mean here is I assume Riemann series don't have those singularities and only consider them separately. But certainly when you could, but even this. Because this pinching process, this data in different Riemann surface connected, I think there is also again a folklore is that the data on the torus is enough. If you have a data on the torus, you get everything. And to prove that, probably really using this pinching process, if this pinching do not produce any singularity, you can show that, then maybe this data on the torus is enough. But again, this is I think this is I don't know whether it's the open question. I think it's the open question whether this STC, whether STC can completely describe a cohomology order or this module tensor category or not. Maybe that's still a conjecture.
What the theorem is that if you include punctures, arbitrary punctures in genus zero, then it is
separate. Yeah, if you include the puncture, then that's another thing.
With the pinching.
I will go to puncture. So maybe I'll skip this. Yeah, and so. Maybe let me just mention it a little bit. So actually, as we learned, there's two kinds of topology order. One is invertible, another is non-invertible. The invertible topology order are very simple. They have no non-trivial bulk topological extension. So all the bulk topologies are trivial, but we'll explain that in a moment, what that means. And it turns out that their boundary is non-trivial. For invertible topology, boundary is always non-trivial. We already encountered that. And the way to say their boundary is non-trivial is that the boundary have a gravitational anomaly. So that's a more precise way to say the boundary is non-trivial. And certainly if the invertible topology have a symmetry, and then the boundary is non-trivial can have a so-called gauge anomaly, you're associated with the symmetry group. So therefore this SPD state you heard about can be viewed as an invertible topology order with a symmetry. And yesterday we heard about this very systematic theory of invertible topology order. Here I just want to mention there is a nonlinear thing model construction, which you construct maybe big class, maybe not all the class of this invertible topology order. The construction is pretty simple. We consider nonlinear thing model, the target space is a group G times SO infinity. And then the nonlinear thing model have a usual dynamical term and also have this so-called 2 pi quantized topological term in nonlinear thing model. And it turns out that this 2 pi quantized topological term determine different SPT order. So if you choose different topological term, the nonlinear thing model will describe different SPT order. And these topological terms are classified by this a group cohomology of G cross SO. But there are some technical detail. We have to quotient out something. After we quotient out, we can produce some table. So this is one way to systematically produce invertible topological order, at least a subclass of invertible topological order. And since invertible topological order have no bulk excitation, so they are very simple, we can do that in any dimension. And actually, this table agree with this cobordism approach. I think we will hear soon today. And so to classify topological order, and so maybe one way to do it, if you believe this STC fully characterized topological order, then you can using this data try to formulate a way to classify topological order. And it's actually it's a the idea is very simple. You know, for every topological order, we can produce this data. But if you choose this data arbitrarily, they will not correspond to a realizable topological order. So therefore, we need to find a set of conditions such that if STC satisfies this set of conditions, then they have one-to-one correspondence with topological order. So the key is to find this set of condition. And the way to find this set of condition is to study topological excitation. So we already heard that is to include the punctures. You know, this ground state is only just have no punctures. So maybe they are not enough. So if you include the puncture on the Riemann surface, and so that means in physics, that means if you include topological excitation on the Riemann surface, then you have a full description. So what is a puncture? What is a topological excitation? Again, similar. Suppose we have a psi, which we say is a ground state. The topological excitation is another wave function, which are locally indistinguishable with the first wave function, the ground state, except near a field point, which is a puncture or which is a position for quasi-particle. So because they are locally distinguishable near a field point and indistinguishable everywhere else, so you can imagine we can trap this wave function using local Hamiltonians. So therefore, this topological excitation is a ground state of some Hamiltonian with the traps, and that's it. And again, there's a gap. But however, the ground state can also have a degeneracy. So both the so-called ground states or topological excitation, they are not a single wave function, not a single vector. They are subspace. They both are subspace. So this is the topological excitation actually is a subspace of a Hamiltonian with a trap or with a puncture that you might never say that the trap is a puncture, puncture is a trap. Okay. And this subspace is called a fusion space in the tensor category theory. So then with this setup, now we can explain what is the trivial excitation. As we heard, the trivial excitation is the excitation which can be created by local operator. You know, if the distinction at this point is really can be created by local operator, then we say that's a trivial excitation. But however, there's a subtlety. And the subtlety is that the both psi and psi excitation, they are subspace, they are not vectors, not a single state. So therefore, to say what do you mean by can be created by local excitation, a little tricky. So actually, we have this notion that we have a local operator act on this subspace, then this result will be a subspace of this subspace. So that's a one way. So here we use arrow to represent this relation, this arrow called the contained in. Then there's another relation for the excitation subspace. There's another local operator. We can find another local operator act on that, and the result is contained in the ground state subspace. Again, this is contained in up to a local operator. So why I do this? Because this is I try to explain the category theory. The category theory is a point and arrow. So this is arrow, and so this is really called the morphisms in the category theory. And so we have arrow in both directions. So the trivial excitation means it's isomorphic to these ground states. So because you have arrow this way, arrow that way. So this is basically define this local excitation and using arrow or using morphism.
Just a question about the type of excitations you're looking in the physical system. I mean, you're looking only, you can create an holomorphic excitation or anti-holomorphic one. Are you restricting to like particle like holomorphic one and neglecting the others?
No, this is everything. This is everything. So it's not only holomorphic. Yeah, this example is holomorphic, but
it could be
much more ugly, you know, and anything, yeah, any local operator. Certainly, topological excitation really means that using this notion of arrow means we don't have arrow to ground state and the grounds don't have arrow to that. So that's something not equivalent. And the topological type basically is equivalent class, again, can say the arrow. Suppose we have two excitations. We say they are equivalent if you have an arrow this way and arrow reverse arrow, have arrow in both directions. So it means that we have a local operator which act on the first one is contained in the second one, or we have another local operator act on the second one is contained in the first one. So this is a more precise way to say what do you mean by equivalence. But this arrow in both directions, again, is isomorphic in category theory. And with this kind of a more careful description, it turns out we find actually the topologization have a two type, symbol type and composite type. And this is what we learn, what we gain from this kind of description. The symbol type is a particular topologization that suppose this is symbol type, then if another type of topologization have this arrow is contained in a symbol type, that imply the symbol type is contained in there. So that means symbol type is the smallest one. If someone is containing a symbol type, the symbol type is contained in something. So this is kind of smallest. So in a sense, it's like in the group theory, it's like a representation theory of like a SO3 group. Is every representation is like a composite type. The symbol type is like an irreducible representation. So that's kind of an example for that. And the composite type would be like a direct sum of symbol type, just like a spin. So this more careful discussion, okay, tell us there's a symbol type and composite type. And this realization is important to understand the fusion, because so basically here, I try to say that the category theory sounds like a very difficult topic. But actually, it's not that. It's the category theory is really just a theory for excitation, for quasi-particles. So it's not that foreign. And so here, I just explain one feature of category theory. So that means the quasi-particle may have a symbol type, a composite type. In physics term, is that the composite type just means accidental degeneracy. So usually, it's when you say the particle have a spin 1, we say spin 1. We don't say a particle have a spin 1 and a 2. But in general, we could have that if a spin 1 to happen to be degenerate. Then this particle would have a composite type, the spin 1 and the 2. They are just accidental degenerate. But in physics, we usually don't talk about the particle with accidental degeneracy. So the particle we talk about always simple type. So that's basically this notion, simple and the composite type. But that is a category theory. But we also know particle can fuse. So if you add the fusion feature structure, then the category theory became a tensor category theory or fusion category theory. So that's tensor part of a category theory. So we can fuse two particles. But usually in physics, we somehow kind of assume that the two simple type would fuse, we get another simple type. And this actually is not true. In more general case, two simple type when they fuse, you can get an accidental degeneracy, means a direct sum of many simple type that's composite type like this. IJ fuse, we get a sum of K1 and another K1 or K2, K3. Then we just rewrite this using this NIJK. So K1 appear twice, so this NIJK1 will be equal to 2 and etc. So they describe how many the composite structure. So this NIJK it's a data to describe this fusion structure, the one of a simple data to describe a fusion. So this kind of so this kind of fusion is mathematics called a fusion ring of the tensor category theory. And from NIJK, we can also obtain so-called quantum dimension for each topological type. The quantum dimension just means how much internal degree freedom it has. But certainly we can also braid, you know. Particles not only can fuse, they can always braid each other. So that's we get the braided fusion category. So we add a braid here. So the particles are really braided fusion category. So certainly this IJ, yeah, I forgot to mention that. NIJK satisfies some conditions because the fusion is supposed to be associative. You know, IJ can fuse first, or JK can fuse first. Then we can, NIJK should satisfy this condition to have a associativity. But if they can braid, NIJK have another condition that they are symmetric about the JK, IJ, because a fusion of IJ, you can braid them, exchange them, and fusion of JI should be the same if you can braid them. And however, there is a braiding have another data, which is a mutual statistics. We can move I around the J by 2 pi. And however, we should get a phase. But however, if you move, but however, this phase is not really constant. It depends on the fusion channel for I and J, because I and J can fuse into several so-called a single type. So if IJ together can be viewed as a direct sum of single type, and in this in each block, this phase can be different. So therefore, the mutual statistic is not just a phase depend on IJ. It's also this phase also depend on the fusion channel of I and J. So actually, this theta with a 3 index. Okay. And there's another thing, if you can braid, it's a spin. Means we have a single particle I, we just twist this I by 2 pi, then to see what kind of phase we can obtain. So this got a spin, which is the e to the 2 pi I sk. This is the phase we obtain by twisting this k particle. I won't explain this. It turns out that this theta, this mutual statistics can be totally determined by the spin. So we have such expression. So we can drop this, keep the spin. So this already contained all the information. So at the end, what we gain is that the data, topological data to describe a punctures of this quasi particle is NIJK, this fusion ring, and SI, the spin. Okay. And so this is with a puncture. We can assume this is on the sphere, so or maybe on any Riemann sphere, but so actually, there is a relation between this STC with no puncture and NIJSI with a puncture. These two set of data are related. Again, there's a lot of result we know in the tensor category theory. So this is the relation between these two set of data is one of the result. So therefore, the condition on this NIJSI and the condition on ST, you know, ST should satisfy this reputation of a modular group. So there are conditions on ST. Those two conditions can be combined. If you combine these two conditions, we get enough condition to specify this NIJ or ST. Okay. So this is an approach used in this paper, Rowe, Stone, and Wang. And they're using this kind of philosophy. Try to classify the modular unitary modular tensor category theory, and so we call this is a simplified theory for unitary modular tensor category theory, which is different from a standard point of view. Standard point of view have the NIJK, have F symbol, have R symbol, and this is very hard to deal with. And so here we try to say that this F symbol, R symbol can be replaced by single SI. And for modular tensor category theory, this replacement seems to work. And so one can have a much simpler theory. And so here, just a list of the known condition. So that there's a condition for the fusion ring. That's NIJK, we talk about that. And there's a very important relation called the Waffen theorem, which really says that if you fuse I, j, k, l together, then move I around j, and then move I around k should equal to move I around the bound combination line j and k. So this relation gave us this idea gave us relation between n and s. So therefore this s, if you know n, then s has to satisfy this relation. So this v is some kind of integer tensor construct from n. So s is a rational number. So when you hit by this integer tensor, you should get something integer. And this condition is very, very important because this tells us if you know n, then you'll know s up to a finite set. Only a finite set of s satisfy this condition. So the whole thing became finite search. We just search for n satisfy this condition, associativity condition, and using Waffa theorem to find s, a finite set s, then among those finite set of s and n, we construct this ST matrix, check this modular condition, and there's another Frobenius Schultz indicator condition, and so that's all. And if you do that, you get this a table of modular tensor category theory. And so you can just do this a straightforward numerical search. And so this is a table for bosonic topology order. Yeah. And maybe let me just, using last few minutes, let me just say one more thing.
I have a question. So
yeah.
Does that mean that all the pentagon and hexagon equations are guaranteed without checking them?
This is the assumption. So assumption, that's a conjecture that this STC fully corrects topology order under such assumption. Yes, that means they fully determine the pentagon and the hexagon equation for F symbol, R symbol.
I mean, this is a conjecture.
This is conjecture.
Far from proving it.
Yeah, it's far from proving.
There is no evidence. It's a highly non-trivial.
So there's no.
We
don't know counter example. After many years of trying. Yeah, this is a check. That's here. Is there a concern the condition is not enough? The condition is certainly necessary. So therefore, all the topological order should be in here. But there may be fake entries. You know, some entries satisfy those conditions, but they don't correspond to real modular tensor category. This is possible. And so actually we.
This is clearly a subset of the condition. The question is whether this is sufficient or whether you need additional conditions.
That's right. This is a very important.
Say that this list satisfies the subset, but it might not satisfy the rest, then the
yes.
Doesn't say anything.
Exactly. So maybe there's a fake entry. You know, some entry is a fake. They're not valid. It's possible.
No, the conjecture is that if you have two modular categories which are not the same, they will have different S, T, and C.
It's different
from this. Yeah. Yeah, that's uniqueness. And there's a two statement. So there are two problems with this table. One is a more serious one is some entry may be fake. They don't even correspond anything. This is a more serious problem. Another problem is uniqueness, is that each entry may correspond to several topological or several modular tensor categories. That's a unique problem. But so I'm addressing the first one. Some entry may be fake, so this table may be kind of fake. And with a shorten, we checked using this simple current algebra construction. We have discussed a long time, and we found every entry in this table. Certainly more than this table. Actually, we have a table up to 9 particle. So this is I only have a room to list 5. So you can. Go to 9, but certainly with other bound on the total quantum dimension, there's other
thing. All modular tensor categories.
Yeah, for the, at least for those table, we find that they all can be constructed using simple current algebra.
And which conditions do you use? Do you use modular data conditions?
Modular data condition, yes. Those are really just modular data.
There is this Anderson-Moore-Waffa equation, which
yes.
Is additional to that.
Yeah, this is the Waffa theorem, yes.
What's the
there's another paper by Anderson Moore. I don't know what the date. Yeah. So.
Well, yeah.
There's a. It's really coming from this. The braiding this way equal to
yeah,
all the way. Yeah, determinant of this.
So for example, if you have Isaac, if you don't impose this, then the twist, you can have any value. But if you impose this, then it has to be order 16. So
yeah.
And then all of them are realizable.
Yeah. So this condition is very, very useful. That's make the whole program into finite search. So I put this to the second condition. This is independent. So first one determine the fusion ring.
A condition that satisfies any modular category, but
yeah.
It's additional to the notion of modular data on the
ring. Yeah. So the first is a Gaussian-like ring, is a fusion ring.
Yes.
The second determine S basically up to the almost determine S.
So you have to assume that this is true.
And this is true for tangent category theory. So for multi category, so this is a necessary condition. So every multi tensor category should have this property.
Yeah, so the modular tensor category twists roots of unity. And to prove that, you need you cannot prove it just from that.
But these conditions follow from the pentagon and hexagon.
Yes.
Yes.
But if you assume the pentagon and hexagon, then the equation.
Yes, that's right.
I thought he was trying to say that he had a smaller set.
This one,
including this one. I do not use panning a hexagon, but I use this one.
Is the fusion ring analogy. So the claim is that the fusion ring plus this, but you also need to impose something about S and T.
Yes, but these two is very important because these two alone make whole thing discrete and finite.
So
became a finite search. And then rest of it has to check the condition. The Verlinder formula was used to construct S matrix. And then this formula is used to, this formula is used to construct S matrix, and the Verlinder formula should be also checked. Yeah.
Check that.
This is another condition to check.
Okay.
Then this S and T have a modular relation that's also checked. So those are just urgent condition to check. But at the moment, at this stage, it's a finite check. Because everything is finite discrete, we just check them numerically.
I'm sorry, what is the set of equations you need to check?
Yeah, this is on these two transparency. So those are equations, but this is the most important, it's a fusion ring associativity condition. And this condition is a relator N and S. So from here, we can get S.
This is how you solve the equation.
Yeah. But the solution is not unique. We get a collection of S satisfy this condition. So we have a lot, actually usually 100,000 S. And then among those S, we can check. From each N and S, we can construct this S matrix, which should satisfy Verlinder equation. Again, then get rid of a lot of actual things. Then we have this anti-modular data.
But do you have any examples which are ruled out at this stage?
Yeah, in each stage you can check what is left. After apply each more condition, you get less and less. You can get less and less. Then at the end, when you check all the conditions, including the last one,
that table is a pain to go through all this.
Go all through this check. Yes. Yeah.
And that was important. None of them
was yeah. So you get this table. Yeah. We don't use this F symbol, R symbol. No, because SR is not gauge invariant. The nice thing about NS is that they are gauge invariant. So they do not depend on basis. Yes, but the compute them, you can do NS. Okay, the way we do is actually the following. You can see this way. We use this symbol current to produce this NST. And then certainly from symbol current, you can compute F and R. So this is the way we do it. So it turns out that all the entry in the table can be produced by symbol current. It's not systematic, so Carol, I'm really expert on this, so I couldn't do it. But we wish there's a systematic way to do this. Actually, there is a program called the CAS, which produce all the simple current diffusion things like that. Yeah. But it's not systematic because we have to quotient, there's a quotient, one third, one half is non-trivial. But however, there's a one important notion, let me just say, I'm really late. So the reason this table is a kind of no fake entry, there's a physical reason, is that because every particle are remotely detectable. So that means for every particle, there's another particle with non-trivial braiding with this particle. And so this introduced a notion of Müger center. So basically, the Müger center is a subset of a particle which have a trivial braiding with everything else. And so here we have a condition that the S matrix is a S matrix. Where I say that? No, I didn't say that. So actually, here, from here, this is a C is invertible. So S squared to C means the S matrix is invertible and unitary. So this condition really says that the Müger center is a trivial. So the only the trivial particle have a trivial braiding with everything else. Every other non-trivial particle must have a non-trivial braiding with something. So Müger center is a trivial. So basically, the Müger center trivial means this data is anomaly free, so they are realizable. If a Müger center is non-trivial, this means anomalous. Probably that's related to the things we have only realizable on the surface. And the reason I introduced the Müger center is because, this is my last slide, is that we can generalize this to classify fermionic topology order by simply say that we classify the Brady diffusion category theory where Müger center is not trivial, including one and another so-called parent fermion. So another fermion. So that's Müger center have two particles, one and the fermion. And this fermion and the one both have a trivial braiding with everything else. If you classify this kind of a so-called Brady diffusion category, then you actually get a table for fermionic topology order. And this also can be generalized to classify SET, because if you say the Müger center is a category of a representation of a group with this replacement, then you should get a classification of a topology order with a symmetry, and et cetera. So again, this table was constructed in a similar way. Again, we use the NIJKS and using this modular condition. But certainly the modular condition should be modified because this is no longer really modular. But with some set of modified condition, one can produce this table. Again, this table, every entry in the table is not fake because they can construct by simple current algebra so far. And also most fermion topology we find actually is a fermion product state tensor with a bosonic one. It's a pretty simple one. But a few like this is not tensor product. Actually, there's a mathematical, there's a theorem that all the abelian fermion topology order is a bosonic topology or tensor product with a fermion product state. All the abelian one is this. There's a theorem like that. So, there's a few primitive fermionic topology order. I think we probably will hear this in later. And there's some other one. And okay, I'm sorry, I'm really late. Yeah.
Questions now, and we'll meet again at 10:35 for Pavel's talk.
Yeah.
And that was a time for a coffee break.
Okay.